This is disc number 22.
Nikki watched General Meifert's blue eyes glance to Kara as she came up beside Richard. He smoothed back his blonde hair. Mistress Kara? General? Life is too short for you two to pretend you don't care for each other, Richard said, his anger surfacing. You ought to realize that every moment you have together is precious, and there is nothing wrong with holding someone in high regard. That's the kind of freedom we're fighting for. Well, isn't it?
Yes, Lord Rawl, General Meifert said, somewhat taken aback.
We're here because of a report you sent about a woman who was stabbed. Is she still alive? The young general nodded.
I haven't checked in the last hour or so, but she was earlier. My field surgeons attended to her, but there are wounds well beyond their ability. This is one of those. She was stabbed in the gut. It's a slow and painful way to die. She's lived longer than I expected.
Do you know her name? Nikki asked.
She wouldn't tell us when she was wide awake, but when she was in a fevered state, we asked again, and she said her name was Tovey.
Richard glanced at Nikki before asking, What does she look like?
Heavy set, older woman.
Sounds like her, Richard said as he wiped a hand across his face. We need to see her, right away.
The general nodded. Follow me, then.
Wait, Nikki said. Richard turned back to her.
What is it?
If you go in to see her, she won't tell you anything. Tovey hasn't seen me for ages. The last she knew, I was still a slave to Jagang, and she had escaped. I might be able to talk to her in a way that will get the truth out of her.
Nikki could see how impatient Richard was to get his hands on one of the women that he believed was responsible for taking the woman he loved. Nikki still didn't know what she believed. She wondered if she still believed that he was only dreaming up this other woman simply because of her own feelings.
Richard, she said as she stepped closer to him, so that she could talk confidentially. Let me do this. If you go in there, it will spoil what I can do. I think I can get her to talk, but if she sees you, the game will be over.
And how do you plan to accomplish getting her to talk?
Look, do you want to know what happened to Kaelin? Or do you want to argue about how I'm going to get that information?
He pressed his lips tight for a moment. I don't care if you pull her intestines out an inch at a time, just get her to talk.
Nikki briefly put a hand on his shoulder on her way by as she followed after the general. Once they were away, she moved up and walked beside him as they marched through the nearly dark camp. She could see why Kara found the man attractive. He had one of those handsome faces that just didn't look like it could wear a lie well at all.
By the way, he said, glancing over at her, I'm General Meifert.
Nikki nodded.
Benjamin.
He paused in the dark pathway through the camp.
How do you know that?
Nikki smiled.
Kara told me about you.
Still, he stared at her. She took his arm and started him moving again. And for a Mord Sith to speak so highly of a man is quite unusual.
Kara spoke highly of me?
Of course she likes you, but you know that.
He clasped his hands behind his back as they walked.
I guess then that you must know that I think a lot of her.
Of course.
And who are you anyway, might I ask? I'm sorry, but Lord Rawl didn't introduce us.
Nikki gave him a sidelong glance. You may have heard of me as Death's Mistress.
General Meifert stumbled to a stop, choking on spit from gasping. He coughed until his face was red. Death's Mistress? He finally managed. People are more afraid of you than Jagang himself.
For good reason.
You're the one who captured Lord Rawl and took him to the old world.
That's right,
she said as she started out again. He walked along beside her, thinking it over.
Well, I'd guess that you must have changed your ways or Lord Rawl wouldn't have you with him.
She simply smiled at him, a smooth, sly smile. It made him uneasy. He gestured to the right.
Down here. The tent where we put her is over here.
Nikki grasped his forearm to hold him in place. She didn't want Tovey hearing her, yet.
This is going to take a goodly amount of time. Why don't you tell Richard that I said he should get some rest? I think Kara ought to get some rest, too. Why don't you see to that as well?
I guess I could do that.
And General, If my friend Kara doesn't leave here in the morning with a giddy grin, I'll gut you alive.
His eyes widened. Nikki couldn't help but to smile.
A figure of speech, Benjamin.
She arched an eyebrow.
You have the night with her. Don't waste it.
He smiled at last. Thank you.
Nikki.
Thank you, Nikki. I think about her all the time. You don't know how much I've missed her, how much I've worried about her.
I think I do. But you should tell her that, not me. Now where is Tovey?
He lifted an arm and pointed. Down there, on the right, the last tent in the line. Nikki nodded.
Do me a favor. See to it that no one disturbs us, including the surgeons. I need to be alone with her.
I'll see to it. He turned back and scratched his head. It's none of my business, but are you...
He gestured between her and back the way they'd come.
You and Lord Rawl, well, you know...
Nikki couldn't seem to make herself come up with an answer that she wished to voice. Time is short. Don't keep Kara waiting.
Yes, I see what you mean. Thank you, Nikki. I hope to see you in the morning.
She watched him rush off into the darkness, then turned to her task. She hadn't really wanted to unnerve the general with talk of death's mistress, but she needed to slip back into that part of herself, needed to think that way again, needed to find the icy attitude that was numb to everything. She pulled the tent flap aside and slipped inside. There was a single candle lit on a holder made of wrought iron that was stuck in the ground beside a cot. The tent was stuffy and warm. It smelled of stale sweat and dried blood. Tovey's bulk lay on her back in the cot, laboring to breathe. Nikki sat lightly on a field stool beside the woman. Tovey hardly noticed someone sitting down. Nikki laid a hand on Tovey's wrist and began to trickle in a thread of power to help the woman suffering. Tovey recognized such gifted help and immediately looked over. Her eyes went wide, and her breathing quickened. She then gasped in pain and clutched at her abdomen. Nikki increased the flow of power until Tovey sagged back with a moan of relief.
Nikki, where have you come from? What in the world are you doing here?
Well, since when do you care? Sister Yulisha and the rest of you left me in Jagang's clutches, his personal slave, left me a captive of that pig.
But you got away.
Got away? Sister Tovey, are you out of your mind? No one gets away from Dreamwalker. Except you five.
Four. Sister Marissa is no longer living.
What happened?
Stupid bitch tried to play her own game with Richard Rawl. You remember how she hated him, wanted to bathe in his blood?
I remember.
Sister Nikki, what are you doing here?
The rest of you left me to Jagang. Nikki leaned in so that Tovey could see her glare. You have no idea of the things I've had to endure. Since then, I've been on a long mission for His Excellency. He needs information, and he knows I can get it.
Tovey smiled.
Makes you whore for him, to find out what he wants to know.
Nikki didn't answer the question, instead letting it answer itself. I just happened to hear about some fool woman who, in the process of getting herself robbed or something, also managed to get herself stabbed. Something about the description made me decide to come and check myself to see if it could possibly be you.
Tovey nodded.
I'm afraid it's not good.
I hope it hurts. I came to make sure you're a long time dying. I want you to suffer for what you did to me, leaving me in the clutches of Jagang while the rest of you escaped without bothering to even tell me how it could be done.
We couldn't help it. We had a chance, and we had to take it, that's all.
A cunning grin came to her.
But you can get free of Jagang, too.
Nikki pressed forward. How? How can I get free?
Heal me, and I'll tell you.
You mean heal you so you can betray me like before? No good, Tovey. You're going to tell it all. Or I'm going to sit right here and watch you suffer your way into the Keeper's eternal embrace. I may trickle in just enough to keep you alive a little longer. She leaned in, so you can continue to feel the pain twisting in your guts a little longer.
Tovey seized a fistful of Nikki's dress.
Please, sister, help me. It hurts so much.
Talk, sister.
She released her grip on Nikki's dress and let her face roll to face away.
It's the bond to Lord Rawl. We swore a bond.
Sister Tovey, if you think I'm that stupid, I'm going to make you suffer just to make you regret the thought until you die.
She turned back to look at Nikki.
No, it's true.
How can you swear a bond to someone you want to eliminate?
Tovey grinned.
Sister Eulicia figured it out. We swore a bond to him, but made him let us go before he could hold us to a list of his commands.
This story just gets more preposterous all the time.
Nikki withdrew her hand from Tovey's arm, and with it the trickle of relief. As Nikki stood, Tovey groaned in agony.
Please, Sister Nikki, it's true.
She grasped Nikki's hand.
In exchange for letting us go, we traded for something he wanted.
What could Lord Rawl possibly want that would convince him to let a clutch of Sisters of the Dark loose? That's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
A woman.
What?
He wanted a woman.
As the Lord Rawl, he can have any woman he wants. He has but to pick her and have her sent to his bed, unless she would choose the executioner's block instead. And none do. He hardly needs the Sisters of the Dark to cart women to his bed.
No, 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 not that kind of woman. A woman he loved.
Right, Nikki huffed a sigh. Goodbye, Sister Tovey. Be sure to give the Keeper of the Dead my regards when you get there. Sorry, but I'm afraid that meeting won't be for a while. I think you look like you may linger for a number of days yet. Pity.
Please.
Her arm rotated around, searching for the contact of the one person who could save her.
Sister Nikki, please, please listen, and I will tell you everything.
Nikki sat down and gripped Toby's arm again.
All right, sister, but just remember the power can go both ways.
Tovey's back arched as she cried out in agony.
No, please.
Nikki had no compunction about what she was doing. She knew that there was no moral equivalence between her inflicting torture and the Imperial Order doing what might on the surface seem like the same thing. But her purpose in using it was solely to save innocent lives. The Imperial Order used torture as a means of subjugation and conquest, as a tool to strike fear into their enemies, and at times, as something they relished because it made them feel powerful to hold sway over not just agony, but life itself. The Imperial Order used torture because they had no regard at all for human life. Nikki was using it because she did. While at one time she would have seen no difference, since coming to embrace life she saw all the difference in the world. Nikki reversed the suffering she was trickling into the old woman, and Tovey sank back in grateful, weeping relief. Tovey was covered in a sheen of sweat.
Please, sister, give me some comfort instead, and I will tell you everything.
Start with who stabbed you.
The Seeker.
Richard Rawl is the Seeker. Do you really think I will believe such a story? Richard Rawl would have taken your head off with one swing.
Tovey's head rolled side to side.
No, no. You don't understand. This man had the Sword of Truth.
She pointed at her gut.
I ought to know the Sword of Truth when it runs me through. He caught me by surprise, and before I knew who he was or what he wanted, the bastard stabbed me.
Nikki pressed her fingers to her brow in confusion.
I think you better go back to the beginning.
Tovey was already sinking into a stupor. Nikki increased the magic flowing into her, giving her some healing relief without curing her of her injury. Nikki didn't want to cure her. She needed the woman unable to help herself. Tovey looked the kindly grandmother, but she was a viper. Nikki crossed one leg over the other. It was going to be a long night. The next time Tovey came around, Nikki sat up straighter. So, you swore a bond to Richard as the Lord Rawl, Nikki said, as if there had been no gap in the conversation, and that protected all of you from the Dreamwalker.
That's right.
And then what?
We were able to escape. We kept track of Richard as we went about our work for our master. We needed to find a hook.
Nicky knew very well who their master was.
What do you mean, a hook?
In order to do what we need to do to satisfy the Keeper, we needed a way to make sure Richard Rawl couldn't interfere. We found it.
Found what?
Something that keeps us bonded to him no matter what we do. It was brilliant.
So what is it?
Life.
Nicky frowned, not knowing if she had heard right. She laid a hand on Tovey's wound and gave some focused comfort. After Tovey had calmed from the wave of pain, Nicky asked in a quiet voice,
"What do you mean?"
"Life," Tovey said at last. "It is his highest value.
So,
sister, think. In order to stay out of the Dreamwalker's grasp, we must be bonded to Richard Rawl all the time. We dare not waver for a moment. And yet, who is our ultimate master?"
"The Keeper of the Dead, we have sworn oaths."
"That's right. And if we were to do something that would harm Richard's life, such as loose the Keeper into the world of life, then we would be going against our bond to Richard. That would mean that before we could free the Keeper from his bounds in the world of the dead, Jagang in this world would be able to pounce on us."
"Sister Tovey, you had better start making sense or I will lose my patience. And I assure you, you would not like that. You would not like it one bit. I want to know what's going on so that I can be let in. I want my place back."
"Of course. Of course. You see, Richard's highest value is life. In fact, he created a statue to it. We were in the old world. We saw his statue dedicated to life."
"I got that much out of what you said."
Her head rolled back so she could again look at Nicky.
"Well, my dear, what is it we are pledged to do in the oaths we have given?"
"Free the Keeper."
"And what is our reward for performing our task?"
Nicky stared at the woman's cold eyes.
"Immortality."
Tovey grinned.
"Exactly.
Richard's highest value is life. You are saying that you plan to grant him immortality?"
"We are. We are working toward his most noble ideal, life."
"But he may not want immortality."
Tovey managed to shrug.
"Maybe, but we don't intend to ask him. Don't you see the brilliance of Sister Yulisha's plan? We know that his highest value is life. No matter what else we may do against his wishes, those things do not rise to the level of his most important value. Thus, we are honoring our bond to the Lord Rawl in the most grand way possible, while maintaining the bond, keeping the Dreamwalker out of our minds, and at the same time, working to bring the Keeper into the world. See how it goes round and round? Each element locks the others in tighter."
"But it is the Keeper who promises you immortality. You cannot grant it."
"No, not if we seek it through the Keeper."
"Then how can you possibly grant immortality? You don't have any such power."
"Oh, but we will, we will."
"How?"
Tovey fell to coughing and Nicky had to do some swift work on the wound just to keep the woman alive. It was nearly 2 hours before she again had her conscious and calm.
"Sister Tovey," she said once the woman had opened her eyes and looked like she was seeing again, "I've had to repair some of your injury. Now, before I can repair the rest of your wound and fully heal you so that you can have your reward of life, I need to know the rest of it. How can you think that you can grant immortality? You don't have that power."
"We stole the boxes of Orden. We intend to use them to destroy all life, except that which we wish to have around, of course. With the power of Orden, we will hold sway over life and death. We will have the power to grant Richard Rawl immortality. See? Bond fulfilled."
Nicky's head was spinning.
"Tovey, your story is too impossible. It's more complicated than you make it."
"Well, there are other parts to the plan. We found catacombs under the Palace of the Prophets."
Nicky had had no idea that such catacombs existed, but she wanted the woman to go on with her story, so she just let her talk.
"That's when it all started. When we got the idea. You see, we had been wandering the lands looking for ways to satisfy the Keeper."
She clutched Nicky's arm so hard it hurt.
He comes in our dreams. You know that. He comes to you as well. He comes and torments us, forcing us to do his bidding, to work to free him.
Nikki pulled the claw-like hand off her arm.
Catacombs?
Yes,
catacombs. We discovered ancient catacombs, and in them books. We found a book called Chainfire.
Goosebumps ran up Nikki's arms.
Chainfire? What does that mean? Is it a spell?
Oh, it is much more than anything so simple as a spell. It was from ancient times. The wizards of the time had come up with a new theory of how to alter memory. In other words, real events altered with subtractive power, with all the disconnected parts spontaneously reconstructed independently of one another. Namely, how to make an individual disappear to everyone else by making people forget this person, even as soon as they've just seen them. But the wizards who came up with this theory were timid men fearful of unleashing such things, not only because they realized that such a linked event would cause irreparable damage to the subject, but because there was no way for them to control it once it was initiated. It would be self-actuating and self-sustaining.
What do you mean? What does it do?
It unravels people's memory of the subject, but that ignition starts a cascade event that can't be predicted or controlled. It then burns through links they have with others, and then others those people know, and so on. It eventually unravels connections so that it corrupts everything. For our purposes, though, it doesn't really matter, since our aim is to undo life anyway. For fear that it would be discovered what we were doing, we destroyed the book and the catacombs.
But why did you need to destroy the memory of someone?
Not just someone, but the memory of the woman who bought us the bond in the first place, Kaylin Amnell, Richard Rawl's love. By creating a chainfire event, we ended up with a woman no one remembers.
But what can that possibly gain you?
The boxes of Ordin. We used her to get the boxes, so that we can free the Keeper. With the boxes, we can grant Richard immortal life at the same time we also free the Keeper. The Keeper whispered to us in our dreams that Richard has the secret to opening the boxes. He has a necessary knowledge memorized. It exists nowhere else. Darkenrall revealed it to the Keeper. Richard knows the way to unlock the secrets of Ordin. Only this time, we know the trick that defeated Darkenrall. The book he knows says that we need a confessor to open the boxes. And now we have a confessor who no one remembers, so no one can bother us about her.
What about the prophecy disappearing? Was that caused by Chainfire?
It's part of Chainfire. They call it the Chainfire Corollary. Part of the initiation phase of Chainfire requires that prophecy also be ignited with a Chainfire event, much the same as people's memories are cast into the conflagration. The Chainfire event feeds on those memories to sustain the event. Therefore, prophecy must be involved as well. A blank is found in the proper fork, a place where a prophet left a space, should a future prophet wish to complete the work. We then fill in that void in prophecy with a completing prophecy which has the Chainfire formula invested in it. A Chainfire event thus infects and consumes all the associated prophecy on the branch, starting with related prophecy, either in subject or in chronology, in this case both. Kaylin, the woman we wiped away in life, is thus also wiped away in prophecy by the Chainfire corollary.
You seem to have it all worked out, Nikki said. Tovey grinned through the pain.
It gets better.
Better? How could it possibly get more delicious than this?
There is a counter to Chainfire.
Tovey giggled with the glee of it.
A counter? You mean you risk Richard finding a counter to what you have done? A counter that could bring the entire plan crashing down?
Tovey tried to stifle the giggle, but it bubbled up again. Despite the obvious pain, she was enjoying herself too much to stop.
This is the best part of all. The ancient wizards who came up with the Chainfire theory realized the potential for the total destruction of life. So they created the counter. Should a chain fire event ever somehow come to pass?
Nikki gritted her teeth. What counter?
The boxes of Ordin.
Nikki's eyes widened.
The boxes of Ordin were created to be the counter to the chain fire event you've initiated?
That's right. Isn't that delicious? What's more, we've put the boxes in play.
Nikki let out a deep breath.
Well, like I said, you seem to have it all figured out.
Tovey winced.
Well, almost. There's only one minor issue.
Like what?
Well, you see, the stupid bitch only brought out one box the first time we sent her in. We couldn't allow the boxes to be seen because, unlike Richard's love, people would remember seeing the boxes of Ordin. Kaylin said she had no room in her pack. Sister Eulicia was furious. She beat the girl to a bloody mess. You would have loved it, Sister Nikki. And told her to leave something out to make room if she had to, then sent her back in to get the other two boxes.
Tovey winced under a pang of pain.
We feared to wait, though. Sister Eulicia sent me on with the first box and said she would catch up with me later.
Tovey groaned under the agony of another stitch of pain.
I had the first box with me. The Seeker. The one with the Sword of Truth, anyway. Surprised me and ran me through. He snatched the box. Once Kaylin finally retrieved them, Sister Eulicia then had those two and thought that I had the third. So before she left the palace, she put the magic of Ordin in play.
Nikki staggered to her feet. She felt dizzy. She could hardly believe it. But she knew now that it was all true. Richard had been right all along. With almost nothing to go on, he had basically figured it all out. And all along, no one in the world would listen to him. No one in a world that was unraveling around them in an uncontrolled chain fire event. Chapter 65. A scream that made the fine hairs on the back of Richard's neck stand on end split the quiet night. Richard, in a bedroll in a simple tent, shot to his feet as the scream ripped the air with its terror. The unending shriek ran a shiver up through his shoulders and instantly brought a sheen of sweat to his brow. His heart racing, Richard rushed out of his tent, even as the haunting cry echoed through the encampment as if trying to reach every corner of darkness to express its horror. Outside the tent, which was set apart from the others because it was an extra, Richard saw men standing in the darkness, their eyes wide. Up the row a ways, General Myford watched out on the night with the rest of them. Richard saw that it was false dawn, like the morning Kaylin had vanished. The woman he loved, the woman who everyone else had forgotten and didn't care to remember. If she had screamed, no one had heard her. And then, as the scream died, the world went blacker than black. It was like being plunged into the inky nothingness of the world of the dead, forlorn and forever lost. Richard shivered as his flesh felt like something alien touched the world of the living with intimate promise. As quickly as the darkness had come, it was gone. Men looked around at one another, none speaking. The thought occurred to Richard that the Viper now had only three heads. The Keeper took one of his own, he explained to the questioning faces that had all turned to him. He saw the General watching, listening. Be glad that one so evil is no longer among the living. May all such people find the death they champion. Men smiled and whispered agreement with the curse as they began crawling back into their tents to try to snatch what was left of their sleep. General Myford met Richard's gaze as he clapped a fist to his heart before vanishing back into his own tent. In the dim light of the camp that suddenly seemed to be populated only by tents and wagons, Richard spotted Nikki very deliberately heading straight for him. There was something profoundly disturbing about the way she looked. Perhaps it was that she had just vented a rage that he doubted anyone but he could truly understand or value. Flags of blonde hair flying, she reminded him of a raptor descending in on him from out of the night, all tight muscle and talons. When he saw the tears streaming down her face, her gritted teeth, her fury and hurt, her powerful menace and frail helplessness. Her eyes filled with more than he could grasp. He stepped back into his tent, drawing her in out of the view of the camp. She swept into the tent right for him, like a storm breaking on a headland. He backed as far as he could, having no idea what was wrong or what she intended. With a sob of such naked desolation that it nearly made him cry out in kind, she fell to the ground at his feet, throwing her arms around his legs. She was clutching something in one hand. Richard realized that it was Kaylin's white mother confessor dress.
"Oh, Richard, I'm so sorry,"
she wailed between racking gasps.
"I'm so sorry for what I've done to you. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry,"
she kept mumbling over and over. He reached down and touched her shoulder. "Nikki, what is it?"
"I'm so sorry,"
she cried as she clutched at his legs, as if she were the condemned begging a king for her life.
"Oh, dear spirits, I'm so sorry for what I've done to you."
He sank down, lifting her arms off his legs.
"Nikki, what is it?"
Her shoulders heaved with her racking sobs. She looked up at him as he lifted her by her arms. She was as limp as the dead.
"Oh, Richard, I'm so sorry. I never believed you. I'm so sorry that I never believed you. I should have helped you, and instead I fought you every step. I'm so sorry."
He had rarely seen anyone in such profound misery.
"Nikki,
please,"
she sobbed.
"Please, Richard, end it now."
"What?"
"I don't want to live anymore. It hurts too much. Please use your knife and end it. Please, I'm so sorry. I've done worse than simply not believe you. I've been the one who stopped you at every turn."
She hung like a rag doll from his hands under her arms. She wept in utter misery and defeat.
"I'm so sorry I didn't believe you. You were right about everything and so much more. I'm so sorry. It's all ended now and it's my fault. I'm so sorry. I should have believed you."
She started to almost melt through his grip. Sitting on the floor in front of her, he gathered her up into his arms, much like he had gathered up Jillian.
"Nikki, you were the only one who made me go on when I was ready to give up. You were the only one who made me fight."
Nikki's arms came up around his neck when he pulled her close. She felt hot from the fever of her anguish. She sobbed and kept mumbling how sorry she was, how she should have believed in him about the rest of it, how it was all too late now, how she wanted to end the pain and die. Richard held her head to his shoulder as he whispered to her that it would be all right, whispered his comfort, rocked her gently and quieted her without saying anything of consequence except in its empathy. He remembered then, when he had first met Kaylin and they had spent that first night in a wayward pine. She had nearly been pulled back into the underworld and he had drawn her back at the last moment. Kaylin had cried like this, in abject terror and misery, but more than that, with the release of having someone hold her. Kaylin had never had anyone she valued hold her when she cried. He knew now that Nikki never had either. As he held her in his arms, giving her the unopposed comfort she so needed, she exhausted herself until, feeling safe as perhaps never before, she drifted into sleep. It was such a profound pleasure to be able to give her that rare refuge that he wept silently as he held her and she slept, safe, in his arms. He must have fallen asleep for a brief time because when he opened his eyes, there was pale light coming through the walls of the summer tent. When he lifted his head, Nikki stirred in his arms like a child cuddling closer and never wanting to wake. But she did, rather suddenly, when she realized where she was. She looked up into his eyes, her blue eyes weary.
"Richard,"
she whispered in what he knew would be the beginning of the same thing. He pressed his fingertips to her lips, halting her words. "We have a lot of things to deal with. Tell me what you learned so that we can get on with it." She put the white dress in his hands.
"You were right about almost everything, even if you didn't know the mechanism. Sister Eulicia and her small band wanted to remain free from the Dreamwalker, just as you said. They resolved, since you value life, to give you immortality. Anything else they did, no matter how destructive, they viewed as of secondary importance.
This gave them the freedom to pursue freeing the Keeper.
Richard's eyes went wider as he listened.
They found Chainfire and used it to make everyone forget Kalin, so that they could steal the boxes of Ordin. Your father in the underworld let the Keeper know that you have memorized the book they need. They know that they need a confessor to obtain the truth. Kalin accomplishes two tasks, stealing the boxes and helping to get the truth of the book you know. Chainfire, not the prophecy worm, is also responsible for what is happening to prophecy. The sisters have two of the boxes of Ordin, and they put them in play. They have launched that phase of their plan for two reasons. Because they want to use Ordin to call the Keeper into the world of life, and because the boxes of Ordin were created as a counter to the power that can be engendered with Chainfire.
Richard blinked. What do you mean? They only have two boxes. I thought they used Kalin to steal all three. All three were in the Garden of Life.
Kalin brought out one box. They gave it to Tovi and had her start out while they sent Kalin back in for the other two.
Sent her back? Richard frowned. What are you leaving out?
Nikki licked her lips, but she didn't break his gaze.
The reason for Tovi's scream.
Richard felt his eyes watering. A lump rose in his throat. Nikki laid a hand over his heart.
We'll get her back, Richard.
He clenched his teeth and nodded. So then what happened?
The new Seeker surprised Tovi, stabbed her, and stole the box of Ordin she was spiriting away from the People's Palace.
We have to start a search. They can't have gone far.
They are long gone, Richard. Just like they covered their tracks when they took Kalin, they will have done the same this time. That is not the way to find them.
Richard looked up. Samuel, the Sword of Truth was a counter. When I gave him the sword, he must have recognized the truth about Kalin. His gaze roved the inside of the tent as he tried to think. We need to think this through. Collect all the information we can and get ahead of them, instead of always being behind them.
I'll help you, Richard. Anything you want, I will do. I will help you get her back. She belongs with you. I know that now.
He nodded, thankful that her iron was back. I think we had better get some things straight and then get some experienced help. She smiled a crooked smile.
That's the Seeker I know.
Outside the tent, men had begun to gather, all wanting to see the Lord Rawl. Out of the crowd came Verna.
Richard, thank the Creator. Our prayers have been answered.
She threw her arms around him.
Richard, how are you?
Where have you been?
I was tending to some injured men, scouts who met a few of the enemy. General Myford sent word for me to return at once.
And the men?
Fine,
she said with a smile.
Now that you are finally with us for the final battle.
He took up her hands. Verna, you know you have had a hard time with me in the past. She grinned as she nodded that it was true. When she saw that he wasn't smiling, her smile faded. This is going to be one of those times, he told her. You are going to have to believe in me and what I say, or we might as well give up to the order right now. Richard let go of her hand and climbed up on a crate to be better heard. He realized that a sea of men surrounded him. Kara and General Myford were right near the front.
Lord Rawl, will you be able to lead us?
He asked.
No,
he called out into the still dawn air. Worried whispers spread back through the men. Richard held up his arms.
Listen to me, they quieted. I don't have much time. I don't have the time to explain things as I wish I could. That is the way it is. I will give you the facts and I will let you decide. The army of the Imperial Order has been slowed a bit down south.
Richard held up his hands to stifle the cheers.
I don't have much time. Listen now. You men are the steel against steel. I am the magic against magic. I now must pick one of those two for the coming battle. If I stay here and lead you fight with you, then we are not going to have much of a chance. The enemy forces are huge. I don't need to tell any of you men that much. If I stay and help you fight them, most of us will die.
I can tell you right off, General Myford said, that I don't like that choice.
Most of the men agreed that the grim picture he had just painted was not something they relished.
What's the alternative?
A man nearby called out.
The alternative is that I let you men do your job and present the steel to keep the order from choosing instead to run rampant through our lands. Meanwhile, I pledge to do my job of being the magic against magic. I will do what only I can, and work to find a way to defeat the enemy without any of you men having to lose your life in battle with them. I want to find a way, with my power, to banish or destroy them before we have to fight them. I can't guarantee that I will succeed. If I fail, I will die in the attempt and you men will have to face the enemy.
Do you think you can stop them with magic of some sort?
Another man asked. Nikki jumped up beside him. Lord Rawl has already set people in the old world against Jagang's forces. We have fought battles in their own homeland in the hopes of taking away their support. If you insist on keeping Lord Rawl here with you, then you are wasting his singular talent, and you might die as a result. I ask, as one who fights at his side, that you let him be the Lord Rawl. Let him do as he must, while you do as you must.
I couldn't say it any better, Richard told them. There it is, then. That is the choice I give you.
Unexpectedly, men began going to their knees. Far and wide, dust rose as men shuffled to make space to kneel down. In one voice, the chant began. Master Rawl, guide us. Master Rawl, teach us. Master Rawl, protect us. In your light we thrive. In your mercy we are sheltered. In your wisdom we are humbled. We live only to serve. Our lives are yours. Richard watched out over the sea of men as the sun broke the horizon. The devotion was repeated a second time and then a third time, as was customary in the field. Once it was done, men began to return to their feet.
I guess that's your answer, Lord Rawl, General Myford said. Go get the bastards.
The men cheered their agreement. Richard hopped down and took Nikki's hand to help her down. She ignored the hand and jumped down of her own accord. Richard turned to Kara.
Well, I have to go. We're in a hurry. Look, Kara, I want you to know that I would be fine with it if you would like to decide to stay with the army.
A dark frown descended over Kara as she folded her arms.
Are you crazy?
She looked up over her shoulder at the general.
I told you, the man is crazy. See what I have to put up with?
General Myford nodded seriously.
I don't know how you do it, Kara.
Training, she confided. She trailed her fingertips across his cheek, smiling up at him in a way Richard had never seen her do before.
Take care of yourself, General.
Yes, ma'am, he smiled at Nikki before bowing his head. As per your orders, Mistress Nikki. Richard's mind was already elsewhere.
Come on, let's get going.
Chapter 66. Marching down the frame and panel hall. Rika leading the way, Kara and Nikki in tow. Richard reached the intersection and turned down a stone passageway with a towering vaulted ceiling that soared up for nearly 200 feet. Fluted columns to the sides rose up at evenly spaced intervals. Through large windows at the top, the massive exterior buttresses that supported the lofty walls could be seen. Streamers of light angled in high overhead and from small round windows down lower. Their boot strikes echoed like hammers through the cold hall. Richard's cape that looked like it was made from spun gold billowed behind him as if in a gathering storm. The gold symbols around the black tunic fairly glowed in the muted light. Passing each shaft of sunlight, the silver emblems in his boots, on his wide multi-layered leather belt, and on his leather-padded wristbands sent blades of light flashing around them, announcing the arrival of a war wizard. The fury of any Mord Sith was enough to cause most people's blood to pause in their veins, but cold anger on Kara's attractive features seemed capable of turning that stilled blood to ice. To his other side, the former Death's Mistress in black looked no less formidable. From the first time he'd met her, Richard could almost hear the air around Nikki crackle with her power, and it was doing that now. Richard passed padded chairs and tables set in niches. Carpets at angles stuck partly into the hall in places, inviting people into quiet, cozy nooks. Richard skirted the carpets because the sound of his boots on polished granite suited him. None of those with him walked across the carpets either. With the reverberation coming back at them from the long hall, the sound built until it sounded almost like an invading army pouring through the keep. Rika turned to him without slowing. She gestured to the right. "They're in here, Lord Rawl." Richard cut the corner without slowing, aiming his march through the center of the huge double doors that stood open into the exquisite library. Heavy oak mullions crosshatched in the doors divided them into a dozen glass panes each. There were shelves to the ceiling on the 30-foot back wall of the library, with ladders that rode on brass rails to provide access. Massive mahogany pillars stood gleaming in the streamers of sunlight coming in from high windows. But low down, the light was more gloomy and had to be cut with lamps. An enormous mahogany table with turned legs that were each bigger around than Richard sat opposite the doors. To each side, pillars rose to support vaults overhead. The ends of the room to the far left and right were left to the shadows. Anne looked astonished.
"Richard, what are you doing here? You were supposed to be with our troops."
Richard ignored her as he grasped the red leather book he had tucked under an arm. He used the book like a broom to sweep aside the sprawl of books laid before them, creating a broad, polished, empty spot before the three gifted people. Richard tossed the red leather-bound book on the table. It made a smacking sound that echoed almost like a clap of thunder. The gold lettering, "Chainfire," gleamed in the gloom.
"What's this?"
Zed asked in dismay.
"Proof," Richard said. "Part of it anyway. I promise to bring back proof."
"It's an ancient book," Nikki told them, "a formula for creating what is called a chainfire event."
Zed's hazel eyes turned up.
"What is a chainfire event?"
"The end of the world as we know it," Richard said with grim finality. "What they were doing turned out to inadvertently involve an attempt to create a contradiction, violating the ninth rule. They finally realized that if anyone ever actually undertook to initiate a chainfire event, it would have cataclysmic consequences."
Nathan frowned at Nikki, apparently hoping for a little more wisdom and experience from a former sister.
"What is he talking about?"
"Wizards in ancient times came up with a new theory on how to alter memory with subtractive power, with all the resulting disconnected parts spontaneously reconstructed independently of one another. The creation of erroneous memory to fill in the voids that had been destroyed. They were studying the theory of how to make an individual disappear to everyone else by making people forget this person, even as soon as they've just seen them, even as they look at them. It unravels people's memory of the subject, but it was discovered that the ignition of such an event starts a cascade that can't be predicted or controlled. Much like a wildfire, it continues to burn through links with others whose memory has not been altered. It eventually unravels the world of life itself."
"And the prophecy worm?" Richard asked.
"It may be real, but the cause of the prophecy vanishing this time is chainfire. As part of the process, the person who initiates the event also fills in a void in prophecy, a place left blank by a prophet for future work. This gap is filled in with a completing prophecy which has the chainfire formula invested in it. A chainfire event thus infects and consumes all the associated prophecy on the branch, starting with related prophecy, either in subject or in chronology. In this case, both. Kaelin. Thus, she is also wiped out of prophecy by what is called the chainfire corollary." Nathan sat down heavily.
"Dear spirits."
Anne, hands in her opposite sleeves, did not look pleased or impressed.
"All well and good, and we will have to study this book and see if anything you've come up with even begins to make sense. But that book is not the immediate problem. You should have stayed with our men. You must lead our troops in the final battle. You must return at once. Prophecy is quite clear. Prophecy says that if you fail to do this, the world will fall under the shadow."
Richard ignored Anne and met his grandfather's gaze. "Guess what the counter is to a chainfire event?" Zed shrugged, looking puzzled by Richard's line of questioning.
How would I know?
There is only one. It was created specifically for this purpose.
What was?
Zed asked. The boxes of Ordin. Zed's mouth fell open.
Richard, that just isn't...
Richard reached into his pocket and pulled out what he had brought. He slammed it down on the table before the three of them. Zed's eyes went wide.
Gags, Richard. That's a snake vine.
You may recall from the Book of Counted Shadows, and when the three boxes of Ordin are put into play, the snake vine shall grow.
But, Zed stammered, the boxes of Ordin are in the Garden of Life, in the People's Palace, under incredibly heavy guard.
Not only that, Nathan put in, but I personally equipped the men of the first file with weapons that are deadly even against the gifted. No one could get in there.
I agree, Zed insisted. It's impossible.
Richard turned and carefully took what Kara had been carrying. He gently set the statue of Spirit down so that the figure was facing the three on the other side of the table, as if she were holding her head high in opposition to their efforts to make her a delusion. This is Kaelin's. She left it there in the Garden of Life in place of the boxes so that someone would know she exists. The Chainfire spell erased her from everyone's memory. Those who see her forget her before she even registers in their minds. Anne waved a hand over the book, the vine, and the statue.
But this is all still conjecture, Richard. Who in the world could even have dreamed up such a plot?
Sister Eulicia hatched the plan, Nikki said. She had sisters Cecilia, Armina, and Tovey with her. Anne frowned.
How do you know this?
Tovey confessed to me. Anne looked more than astonished.
Confessed? Why would she do such a thing? How did you even catch her?
She was fleeing with one of the boxes of Ordin, Richard said. She was ambushed by the man I gave the Sword of Truth to. He stabbed her and stole the box of Ordin she was carrying. Zed slapped his forehead, unable to speak, and thumped down into his chair. Tovey also told me, Nikki said, that they were here in Adendrill and planted that corpse in the Mother Confessor's grave to make sure no one believed Richard, should he happen to try digging it up to convince people he was telling the truth. They got the dress out of the Confessor's palace. They wanted to make sure everyone thought Richard was deluded. Regarding that, I think you should also know that we traveled to the ruins of a city called Casca, down in southern Dahara. Imperial Order scouts were there. I conducted an experiment on one of them. I used the subtractive spell all of you wanted me to use to cure Richard of his supposed delusions. Anne cautiously cocked her head.
And?
He didn't live more than a few moments. Zed, nearly as white now as his unruly hair, put his face in his hands.
I'm sure that some of this will prove quite useful, Anne said, looking rather confused. And it's good that you have uncovered it. But as I said, the fact remains that you need to be with our troops, Richard. We reveal to you that vitally important prophecy. If Wergrissa Ostraka does not lead this final battle, then the world already standing at the brink of darkness will fall under that terrible shadow. These other matters you bring up are intriguing, to be sure, but the prophecy remains our most important mission. We simply can't fail or the world will fall under the shadow.
Richard gripped his temples between his thumb and second finger as he looked down, trying to gather patience. He reminded himself that these people were trying to do what was right. He looked up, meeting their gazes.
Don't you see?
He pointed at the snake vine on the table. This is the final battle. The Sisters of the Dark have put the boxes of Ordin in play. They intend to bring the Keeper of the Dead into the world of the living. They intend to give life over to death in a bid to gain immortality for themselves. The world stands at the brink of darkness. Don't you see? If you three had had your way, bent on enforcing prophecy, and tried to live by words you believed to be foreordained,
I would not have survived the attempt to cure me. I would be dead. In attempting to fulfill prophecy, you would have ensured the success of the Sisters of the Dark and the end of all life. The world of life would have ended because of you. Only free will, Nikki's free will, my free will, has prevented what you three would have brought upon mankind in following your blind faith in prophecy.
Anne, the last one standing, dropped into her chair.
Dear spirits, he's right,
Zed whispered to himself.
The Seeker has just saved three old fools from themselves.
No, none of you are fools, Richard said. We all can do foolish things from time to time by not thinking. The thing to do, then, is to recognize a mistake and not repeat it. Learn from it. Don't allow yourself to fail the next time. I'm not here to tell you that you are fools, because I know you're not. I'm here because I need your help. I want you to start using your minds. You are all brilliant in your own way. You each have knowledge that probably no one else alive has. The woman I love, the woman I'm married to, has been kidnapped by Sisters of the Dark and had a chainfire event unleashed on her life. That event is now burning through the lives of everyone who knew her and will eventually consume everyone living. He gestured to the statue of spirit. I carved that of your granddaughter's spirit, Zed. It was precious to her. She left it there on that stone altar, covered in her blood. I want her back. I need help. Neither Nikki nor Kara remembers Kaelin, but they both know the truth of the fact that they don't remember her because of what's in this book, Chainfire, not because she doesn't exist. You all have lost something incredibly precious when your memory of Kaelin was taken from you. You lost a value in your lives that you could not begin to replace. You lost one of the best. Richard had to stop because he couldn't get the words past constriction in his throat. Tears dripped from his face onto the table. Nikki came close and put a hand on his shoulder.
It will be all right, Richard. We'll get her back.
Kara laid a hand on his other shoulder. That's right, Lord Rawl. We'll get her back. Richard nodded, unable to speak as his chin trembled. Zed rose up.
Richard, I hope you don't think we will fail you again. We won't. You have my word as first wizard.
I'd rather have your word as my grandfather. Zed smiled through his own tears.
That too, my boy. That too.
Nathan shot to his feet.
My sword's in play as well, my boy.
Anne scowled at him.
Your sword is in play? What in the world does that mean?
Well, you know, Nathan said, swirling his hand in display of cut and thrust. It means I will fight the good fight.
The good fight? How about if you help us find Kaelin?
Well, bags, woman.
Anne shot a look at Zed.
Did you teach him to talk like that? He never cursed like that before he spent time with you.
Zed shrugged innocently.
My goodness, no, not me.
Anne scowled at the wizard on each side of her, before looking at Richard and smiling.
I remember when you were first born, Richard. When you were a bundle of life in your mother's arms. She was so proud of you then, just for being able to cry. Well, I guess she'd be pretty proud of you now. We all are, Richard.
Zed wiped his nose on his sleeve.
How true.
If you can forgive us, Anne said, we'd like to be a part of stopping this threat. I, for one, am quite keen to take care of those sisters.
Nikki squeezed Richard's shoulder.
I think you may have a fight on your hands over that. I think we'd all like to be the one to get at them.
Kara leaned past Richard. Sure, easy for you to say. You got to kill Sister Tovey. Chapter 67 Richard stood at the crenellation in the rampart, one foot resting on the low stone, gazing out across the sunlit scene of Adendrill down below the mountain, watching the puffy white clouds parade their shadows across the valley. Zed came up from behind and stood beside Richard, and for a time also watched out in silence.
I can't remember Kaelin, he finally said.
Try as I might, I just can't.
I know, Richard answered without looking over.
But for her to be your wife, she must be a remarkable woman.
Richard couldn't help but to smile.
She is that.
Zed laid a bony hand on Richard's shoulder.
We'll find her, my boy. I'm going to help you. We're going to find her. I promise you that.
Grinning, Richard put his arm around his grandfather's shoulders.
Thanks, Zed. I could surely use the help.
Zed held up a finger.
We'll get started right away.
Right away would suit me, Richard told him. I'm going to need to get me a sword, too.
Ah, well, the sword isn't important. The sword is just a tool. The seeker is the weapon. And I'd say you are still the seeker.
About that, Zed. You know, I've been thinking, and I've come to believe that maybe Shota wasn't acting selfishly by demanding the sword in exchange for what she told me.
How do you figure that?
Well, the Sword of Truth draws from my gift. When I use my gift, such as that day we were down in the library and I read from a book of prophecy, it has the very real potential to call the beast to me.
Zed rubbed his smooth chin.
Well, I guess that's true. Maybe in a way that did help to protect you.
He scowled at Richard.
But she gave it to Samuel. He's a thief.
And what did he steal since he got the sword back?
Zed peered at Richard with one eye.
Steal? I don't know. What do you mean?
He near to killed a sister of the dark and took the box of Ordens she had, preventing the sisters from having all three, so that they can invoke the magic of Orden.
Zed's scowl deepened.
And just what do you suppose that little thief is going to do with the box?
Richard shrugged. I don't know, but at least he bought us some time. We can go after him now and prevent the sisters from having all three boxes at least.
Zed scratched the hollow of his cheek as he gave Richard a sidelong glance.
Kind of reminds a fellow of the last time, doesn't it? With Darkenrall having to get the last box?
Richard frowned over at his grandfather.
What are you saying?
Zed shrugged.
Nothing. I'm just saying.
Saying what?
Like I said, kind of reminds one of the last time, that's all.
Zed clapped Richard on the shoulder.
Well, come on. Rika has dinner ready. We'll all get a good meal before we lay out some ideas for how to proceed.
That sounds great to me.
How do you know? I haven't even told you what she's cooking.
No, I mean... Never mind. Let's go.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Chainfire by Terry Goodkind. Copyright 2005 by Terry Goodkind. Read by Jim Bond. Performance copyright 2004 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number. 1-800-222-3225 or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, Post Office Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan 49417.